May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing and acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. I want to talk about the Genesis text, since we have animals in the room. There are two creation accounts in Genesis. This was quite disturbing to me as a young man when I first learned this, because I was like, what? Moses didn't write all of the first five books of the Bible? But there's actually two different oral traditions that come together in the weaving of biblical texts that we have. The first one is Genesis 1, where God says, let there be. In the beginning, when God began creating the heavens and the earth, God said, let there be, and bang, there is, and it is good. And God creates, separates the light from the darkness and the planets and the stars and the water from the land, and then starts creating trees and plants and then creepy crawly things upon the earth and the birds of the air and the creatures of the sea. And in the end, God says, God creates humankind in God's own image, male and female. God creates them, and it is good. It is good. It is good. That is the refrain of the first creation story in Genesis. And then on the seventh day, God rests. Not because God is tired, but because there is a good thing there to be enjoyed. And so on the seventh day, God rests in order to enjoy the goodness of creation. That's why God rests. And so there's a Sabbath, and we take a pause to enjoy the goodness of things. So that's the first creation story. In that creation story, there is this fateful line where humans are given stewardship over creation, and the word that is used is actually dominion over creation. And what's meant there is that humans will have dominion in the way that God has dominion, not that humans will have dominion in the way that other bad humans have dominion or authoritarian humans have dominion. Like, it's that you will have dominion in the way that God has dominion, and God's dominion is one of caring for life and tending life and nurturing and the flourishing of life. Humans, especially in the West, have taken that charge and exploited creation rather than not caring for it and stewarding it. So there is a call there to steward and a call to care, even from our very beginnings. I mean, the roots of our creation story. So that's the first creation story. Then there's Genesis 2 and 3, which is actually a different strand. And biblical scholars can point to how these things come together. In the first story, God is very transcendent and all-powerful and distant. And God just says, there's a voice that says, let there be, and boom, there is, and there it is. In the second creation story, it's actually very imminent. God is present. God is almost there in the garden. And the first thing that God creates in the second story is humans, is actually Adam, the man, the human. That's the first thing that God creates. I mean, before anything else, before there are creatures or plants or trees or anything, God creates the human. And God fashions the human out of clay. And God breathes God's breath into Adam. And that's the phenomenal part of this story. God breathes God's breath into human. And you have to imagine that this creature comes awake, and here is this man standing in an empty world. That's how that story starts. Here's a human standing in an empty world. And so God plants a garden, and God plants trees to give the human a place. And all the trees are good for food, and there's a tree of knowledge of good and evil, and there's a tree of the knowledge of a tree of life. But anyway, you have this image of this man who's wandering this garden that has been given to him, enjoying this garden. And that's where today's text starts. God is there observing the human, the man, Adam, and Adam is wandering around the garden by himself. And he likes the taste of apricots, and he likes bananas, and he likes mangoes, I'm sure there's carrots there, and there's all kinds of good things for him to eat. But at the end of the day, eating itself is not sufficient. And God looks at the man that God has created and hears the ache and is aware of the ache. And so there's a curious statement here. Like in the first Genesis account, God says, it is good, it is good, it is good. There's just goodness in creation. But the first thing God says here is, it is not good. It is not good that the man is alone. This feels like a revelation for God. Oh, these creatures need company. Like, these creatures need something to be with them. And so what does God do? God says, well, I'm going to make a helper. I'm going to make a helper for him. And so what does God do? Many are going to say, he takes a rib and he makes Eve. No. That's actually not the first thing that God does. When I ask people that, they're all like, yeah, oh, that's when God creates Eve, of course. You know, God creates Adam, then God creates Eve. That's actually not what God does. God begins creating creatures. God is in search of a partner for Adam, right? He's aware of Adam's aloneness, and so he begins creating creatures. And you have to imagine this is a story that's being told around a campfire originally, and it's being told in community. And so whoever the story is telling, you know, like, you have to imagine that Adam wakes up one day, and boom, there is a platypus. And Adam has never seen a platypus. And Adam is in awe of, and or probably a little frightened, or he's just not aware. And there's this thing that falls out of his mouth. He just says, platypus, right? And he names the platypus. And then he's got a day with the platypus. And you have to imagine, what does he do? Like, okay, the platypus swims. So he swims with the platypus, and the platypus walks on the ground. And Adam is just curious and fascinated. And, you know, he spends the day playing with the platypus. And then he gets kind of bored and tired, right? And the platypus doesn't quite match, right? And so Adam goes to sleep, and the next day he wakes up, and boom, there's an ostrich. God has created an ostrich. All right, will this ostrich be a good partner for Adam? And so Adam is like, whoa, ostrich. And the ostrich isn't as much fun to play with, you know? I mean, it's just kind of, you know, it's got its head in the ground, and it's kind of mean, and, you know, whatever. He runs, maybe Adam runs. But you're meant to imagine that Adam is doing this, and each day he wakes up, and there's a bear. And you have to imagine him wrestling with the bear and hanging out with the bear, and at the end of the day, it's not quite the same. And then he wakes up, and there's a lion, you know, and he's running with the lion and sunning with the lion. And the next day there's an antelope, and he's running with the antelope. And there's this whole process where each day Adam experiences this one new creature and is in awe and wonder and just gives it a name to call it something. Adam's voice begins to kind of interact with creation. And you're meant to imagine that God does this, and God has this creative process with all of creation, so that in the search for a partner, in the search for a companion, God has done this process whereby Adam is connecting with and getting to know and understand all the creatures that now will populate the world and inhabit the world and be there. But at the end of the day, it's not enough. At the end of the day, it's not really what Adam's heart longs for. And so God says, okay, this isn't working. My approach, I need to shift my approach, right? Here's all these creatures. They're great. They're good. I mean, the world's a much more interesting place. But I've got to change. And so God causes a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and Adam slept. And then God takes one of his ribs and closes up the place with its flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman and brought her to a man. And you have to imagine that, you know, this is like a Groundhog Day thing where Adam is waking up and every morning there's a new creature, right? And so he's expecting the same thing. Like, he's going to wake up and he's got a really deep sleep that night, and he wakes up and there is woman. There's a woman there, unlike anything he's ever seen. And the first words out of his mouth is not to name her. He doesn't name her. But he says, this at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. this one shall be called woman, or in Hebrew, there's a word play here, and I think it's Ish and Isha. This one shall be called woman, for out of a man this one was taken. Bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. Here is someone that is like me. Here is someone that I can connect with. Here is somebody I can share with. Right? This isn't about, oh, here's somebody who's radically different than I am. That's what the creatures were. Here is somebody who is like me, who I can have companionship with, who I can be a partner with. There's a sufficient amount of similarity, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. We were in our Wednesday gathering, we were talking about this, and there's a couple of folks in the room who are very acutely aware of how a text like this gets used in a patriarchal system, right? Where Adam's created first and then Eve is last, almost as if an afterthought, right? And that therefore Adam has priority in the scheme of things and Eve is secondary in the scheme of things. I actually had my Old Testament teacher, his insight was, no, actually, that's really not the case. I mean, in the ancient world, that was the case. There was a sense of that. I mean, in really patriarchal systems, that she is beneath you. She's almost an other. She's a different kind of species, almost. There's a superiority to man and woman. And that actually, this is a really progressive text in that context. Because the text is saying, no, she's not like you. She is actually the same as you. And she's not an afterthought at all. She's the culmination of creation. Right? She is the culmination of creation. And then the text says, therefore, a man leaves his father and his mother and clings to his wife, and they become one flesh. And again, the patriarchy doesn't really acknowledge Adam's dependency here. Adam's dependency upon family, upon his own parents. Therefore, he leaves his father and mother. He leaves the home. He leaves one home in his dependence in one household to create another household. And he clings to his wife. And they become one flesh. The story goes on from there. But I don't think this part of the story gets enough attention, especially as it relates to our connection to creation and our connection to the animals that of this world, right? We know the companionship of dogs and cats, our companion animals. I believe in Seattle there are more children than, or there are more animals, there are more pets than there are children, right? So we understand their companionship. But I don't know if we fully get and understand their importance, just the importance of all creation, all the creatures, all the critters in our lives. So that's why we are here today, to remind ourselves of that, to take the cue from St. Francis. There are other things that St. Francis was about and important about, and so we'll actually talk about St. Francis next Sunday too. So just because there's more to talk about. But for right now, we'll just rest it there. I guess I would be curious if there's a thought or two, as you've heard me speak and reflect on this narrative and on this part of the creation story, is there, what comes to mind? Are there thoughts that you have about what I've just said? Diane.
Well, it seems like when you get a pet, you are there to care for it, but I think it's actually getting
better. I appreciate what you're doing there. You say when you get a pet, it seems like you're there to care for it, but it's there to care for you. And it's a recognition of our own dependency, of our own interconnection and relationship, which I think is important. Yeah.
I was really
Yeah. So you're talking about the appreciation of the diversity of all of those creatures, right? Yeah. There's something awesome about it all. Yeah, Phil.
Why was St. Francis ever ordained?
I think at the Catholic system of that time, your question was, why wasn't St. Francis ever ordained? He did start an order of monks, and so there was always a template for monks. Ordination is specifically to be a priest, to tend to the things that happen in a church, in a sanctuary, and that wasn't his call. His call was to be in the world, was to work with the poor, and so I don't think ordination would have confined him to a role within the church, and I don't think he wanted that. I think he wanted to be in the world, quite honestly. Yeah, Carol. That wild animals are what?
The wild animals that are stressed on our planet.
Are stressed on our planet?
To think just about the animals in our time.
In our time, in our climate change, in our 8 billion people, the African elephant, ivory, just wild animals, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and if I understand what you're saying correctly around wild animals and their stress, and their habitat, it's about loss of habitat at some level. That just as humans increase and our populations grow, we're taking up more wild space and taking away animal habitations that actually puts a lot of animals at stress, right? There's a, you know, palm oil plantations in Indonesia. There was a famous photo recently where there was this orangutan that, you know, basically charged the bulldozers that were pulling out the trees, and this orangutan is enraged that here we are destroying its habitat to make palm oil plantations, right? That's something we should be thinking about and taking seriously.
Like loving wild things.
What?
Loving wild things as creation.
Loving wild things as creation is a good thing, you're saying. Yes, okay. Ruth. Yeah, you're talking about the etymology of the word, that dominion is related to Latin, to domicile. Like, they come from the same word. And so it is about being a householder. Like, you have to think about dominion in the terms of how you manage the household affairs. There's a certain kind of authority and power and dominion that you have, but it's for the good. It's for home, right? It's for nurture. It's for life. I think it's really helpful. Yeah, that's a great corrective, and we need to think about that. All right. I think the kids or the youth are going to lead us into prayer here, and then we will do the blessing of the animals.